Welcome to the Futile Podcast. If you're a first-time listener, because of this big event thing, because we're doing the Watchmen review tonight, you can check future podcasts and our previous podcasts. We've been doing this for almost a year at the website www.granatseed.com. You can search Futile Podcast on iTunes and subscribe to us. Thank you. We'd appreciate that. Hopefully we'll get some new listeners.
Yeah.
Kind of the experience.
New listeners.
New listeners. That's the plan. So
viral.
Tonight, yeah, I think so. Tonight we're going to talk about Watchmen.
You got to hear this viral podcast.
Well, I got the Futile Podcast cards in my
apartment. Of course. Right where there anyone's
But those
see
go
it.
To the old site.
Yeah, they're
and once they see that this is, they're like, this is going to be so much work to click on this link. Do you even have a link, or does it have
just... It has a link. Okay. No, it has a fucking link.
Yeah, it's
link.
Like...
I'm not an, what do you
think
of an
They're like, ah, I don't know if
I'm going to figure out how to... I'll figure out how to redirect
it. I get emails all the time with links from people. Luke's always like, dude, you got to see this music video. And I'm like, ah.
Fuck it, yeah. It is. Most people are like
but
that.
But I did watch two that he just sent me, and they were great. There was a new... Depeche Mode.
Oh, video. I'd like to see that.
Awesome.
Because
awesome.
New songs, right? New album.
Awesome video,
I'm looking forward.
And then there was actually a very, very good Coldplay video, which was stunning.
Because some of the Coldplay videos
puppets.
Have been okay. Oh, I saw the Coldplay puppet
yeah,
one.
It was
kind
awesome.
Of weird.
At the end, it just got awesomely hilarious because they'd fly off in
the
a helicopter.
Yeah, it's pretty
it's
pretty.
It's like
fun.
A Punch and Judy puppet show
pretty,
and Coldplay
pretty
comes
dumb.
Out
I want to see that Depeche Mode. Okay, so backstory on Watchmen. Everyone should know this, but if they don't...
Ian's version of the backstory.
Well,
so,
this is the backstory, actually.
Except
is it a 12? Is it a 12? Is it a 12 issue or
12 or 13?
12 or I think it's 13.
Well, I think 13.
13 issue comic book, DC Vertigo.
Yeah.
So it's not in the DC universe, but DC essentially was like the parent company for Vertigo, so it allowed Alan Moore to put out this comic book with Dave Gibbons doing the art, which everyone praises. And I mean, the art's passable, but it looks like, I mean, the design looks kind of Saturday morning cartoon strip, you know?
In the comic? Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Basically, it's written, was it actually in 86 that it was written?
Yeah, it was.
Something around there, yeah.
1986. So it's contemporary of its time, talking about sort of an alternate past where through different events, circumstances of the Cold War kind of reach this point where, you know... The dangers that were going on in the 80s are being dealt with in this different world where you have the United States essentially using not only its own stockpile, but a super magic-powered man to sort of keep the other keep the other countries...
honest.
Well, honest, but just to keep them at bay, I guess. I'm not really sure. And Richard Nixon has inexplicably been... term limits has been repealed, and Richard Nixon has been president for 5 terms.
Well, FDR did it, right? Well, he didn't repeal it. He just did it.
No, he just did it, you know, because if you give people, you know, money and say, who do you trust, and they're starving to death, then they're probably going to vote for you.
I just think
they
liked him because he was in a wheelchair.
They didn't know that.
Oh, let's vote that cute guy in the
wheelchair. They didn't know that.
His blanket.
It was. It wasn't really a big thing with the public. No, yeah. It's basic. You know, crowd control 101. If you get people under your thumb and dependent on you and the government, and you and your people are running the government, then you control it. That's fascism. And you know, we're going to deal with that again very soon in this country. And that's kind of what's going on in Watchmen,
serious.
Though not really. That's more what's going on as Alan Moore interpreted it in the Thatcher administration for
right.
V for Vendetta.
Right.
This is his interpretation of the Cold War. And his sort of interesting solution is what the conclusion to the graphic novel is, which they changed for this film. I'm going to try to keep this as spoiler-free as possible because I want to post this like real soon, and I don't want people to feel deterred from listening to the review. I think we can talk about the ideas and the concepts without necessarily spoiling the movie. I don't think we need to worry about the graphic novel, though. I don't think we need to get too specific. So, Zack Snyder, who did the remake of Dawn of the Dead, and then did 300, the heavily green-screened, heavily homoerotic comic book adaptation, which got a large amount of praise, but then also got kind of a large amount of backlash. I think now everything's settled down and everyone's like, yeah, it's basically mediocre. And that's kind of the general consensus, I think, on 300, is that it's got some cool scenes, but I mean, really, it's ridiculously over the top, and it's really not that great.
I like it.
Stupid people like it, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Generally, if it comes on HBO, I'll turn it on.
Well, yeah, you know, there's parts, they're watchable parts, but it's just like... You know,
I like the characters in it. I like the characters.
What
like
characters? You mean the one that yells, or the one that...
The pirate-sounding guy is just... He annoyed me. That's the only
thing. The guy who did the narration?
Spartans. Yeah, that's
what
I
okay, I don't know.
Yeah. He sounded like a gnarly old goat.
Talking about the guy who talks at the end? The guy with the
That guy. Sounds like a pirate.
That just had... No, he was just repeating the dumb dialogue.
Yeah.
It still sounded like a fight.
It was dumb. So what did Snyder do before the Dawn of the Dead remake? Does he have any kind of illustrious earlier
commercials,
career?
Videos?
Just commercials and music videos?
No. I don't
so the point is, there wasn't even a, like, independent feature he did. He's really never done...
I don't believe he would have ever done an independent feature. People like that don't do independent features. David Fincher had never did an independent feature. He directed Madonna videos and commercials.
Yeah. And then did Alien 3.
Yeah. And then they were like, oh, this guy could totally direct something.
I guess they hand you a remake, or hand you a franchise reboot or whatever. And okay. So everyone was kind of... I mean, it's a tough dig for the situation because it's... I don't necessarily know it's rightly so, but basically it's considered the seminal comic book. And everyone now has to give it, you know, fall to their knees, praise. And it's got its problems. And we've discussed those on an earlier podcast where we talked specifically about the graphic novel. But,
why don't you give a link to that right now?
There's a link on the site.
Oh, no, repeat it verbatim. HTTP.
www.graniteseed.com/
Okay, slash what?
Futile podcast. And
what's the
I don't
direct...
know. I don't know what the direct link. I'm going to put the link on the website.
You should memorize them.
I should.
You know, I've been meaning to ask you every once in a while. I'm like, hey, what's that one where we talked about this? And then you're like, I don't know, because it was like a thousand.
You've never asked me that.
I have asked you that before, and you said I don't know, because I was like, I said this one thing this one time, it was funny. I want to hear myself say it.
Okay.
You're like, I don't know what it was.
Ask me again later, and I'll know. And I'm doing a better job of tagging the newer ones, and so they're easier to keep track of to a degree. Anyway, so basically in this culture, you know, you get in the net culture, you've got a lot of people pretty much just from the get-go looking at this movie, looking at the still photos of the character designs, I guess, and the way things are going to look, and hearing rumors on the internet. And, you know, I would say for the most part, people kind of thought there's no way that this can be done justice. Mm-hmm. And so he really had a tall order to achieve, like, a film translation of what is essentially a 13-issue arc in a comic book that's very, very dense with material. And, you know, you don't really see it so much in the form of a comic book because the way it's drawn is and everything. But it's very overwrought also, and you get that in the film, but that's almost to the credit of the guys making the movie, because I would say... this is about as good a translation of that story as you're going
to
get.
Because he has now adapted as near to verbatim and look and everything as you can to two sources. Like, he's completely putting his trust in the originators of the material and saying, let's go with that. And he's becoming like a master, obviously, of doing this. And he might be the only one who's ever really kind of adapted things that well. Generally, anything that's considered a great movie that's been adapted from something else... differs vastly, and that's to the credit of the people who adapted it. Because they understand that a movie is supposed to run a certain way, and it can't be like a novel. A movie can't be like a novel. It's just not possible.
Well, just from a economic of time issue, it's not possible.
So comic books are built... They're now looking at any graphic novel, any comic book that comes out as, hey, look, this thing's already storyboarded. Let's make this. Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing these days.
Well, and it's an action story, and we've got the visual effects technology now to do these things.
I think what his movies are showing now is that maybe we shouldn't be completely adapting verbatim these things because it's not meant. I'm not disparaging the source material, because I really enjoy Frank Miller's 300, and Watchmen is, despite what you think, I think probably the best comic, whatever.
I didn't say I didn't think that.
I think you did. between the lines. Anyway.
Okay, it's like jazz. It's the notes you're not playing.
Jazz fusion. I don't believe that it's meant to be... Yeah, Alan Moore is right. It's not meant to be translated to film. I think he's right there. And so it's fine that they try to do it, and it's fine that I think they mostly succeeded. There's like, you know, we'll talk about it. I think it's the movie's fatally flawed, but that doesn't mean it's not unenjoyable. Not enjoyable.
Yeah, and not with that, not to do any spoilers, but I think in my opinion, the one place where he did change, which is most notably, and I don't think this is a surprise, the fact that the ending of the graphic novel and the ending of the film are different. They're not drastically
superficially different.
But the way that the ending of the film is designed, well, not even designed, but just the difference, I think, is an improvement. Because
the ending of the graphic novel is retarded. But it's also, if you take away the nuts and bolts of it, which are retarded, it's what makes it. It makes it very interesting, but that's
the B story that's kind of not really, they didn't have time.
But it also gives it depth and texture, that's the one, I think, main problem with this movie was that you have to chop out all the depth and texture, and it's still almost 3 hours long.
Yeah.
You know? So his one that's going to be an extra hour, we'll see how much depth and texture he's actually able to add, and you know, who knows, maybe it'll be a better thing. The stuff where, like, Rorschach had to talk to his...
The shrink.
There's a whole lot about that. And that affects the shrink's life with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And there's constant... what was really missing from the depth and texture problem, but it not being there, is that there is suddenly less at stake because you're not seeing every couple pages people on the street and their lives and their little problems and them being threatened and afraid by what they're hearing on the radio. Because every once in a while, they show Nixon, and he's like, oh, we got some nuke problems coming up. What are we supposed to do? We're head-to-head here. But that's people in a room somewhere. It's not people looking afraid. That's one thing that The Dark Knight did really well, is that occasionally they go back to people on the street, and they go back and they show people running and scared and afraid, and their people are literally in fear of this crazy chaos that's going on in their city. And because of time constraints, they had to cut that out of this movie. Because the comic has all these different things about the Knothead gang, and there was more stuff about Hollis Mason.
And the two lesbians.
The lesbian chicks, and
the newspaper
guy and the kid. And then people are always having conversations. Like they're always hearing stuff on the radio and always reading stuff. And there's the New Frontier people.
Yeah.
They're discussing things always. And they're the Greek chorus that's telling you what's going on and why stakes are high.
The cops, right? The detectives are in it a little more.
Exactly. Yeah,
like the first characters you see in the graphic novel.
And they all explain why the stakes are high. And their reactions show you why the stakes are high. And I felt like the movie doesn't really, especially in the second half, it kind of gets rid of the stakes. And you're just kind of following the story. I truly believe this movie was definitely made for people who have read the graphic novel. If you have not read it, I think that this would be confusing and uninteresting.
That's true. It's because it's very talky. It has to be. It's just almost an impossibility, like you said, because it's lacking in depth. You're right, but it's also very talky and slow, and it's almost 3 hours.
I didn't feel the slowness.
I didn't necessarily, but maybe that was because
it didn't drag.
I think part of that is because you kind of, for me at least, when I've seen it like a movie before, it seems quicker when I watch it again. So because this was so faithful to kind of the beat point, the plot points of the novel,
you know what's coming.
I'm sort of like, okay, now this is going to happen. And so it felt like, you know, there's no waiting for something to happen. You just kind of know it's all going to happen. I felt like, you know, Dr. Manhattan in that sense as I sat there watching it. And burned a little hole, circle on my forehead for some inexplicable reason.
Did they explain it?
Did they explain it in the
graphic
novel?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I read it 2 years ago.
One of the TV people says, you don't look distinct enough or something like that. And he's like, well, I guess I could put a mark on me. And he's like, yeah, do that. And so he does that.
But if he does it, it'll be like a mark that he respects.
You're right. He said, which is like the simplest. Because they want him to wear something, don't they?
They wanted him to wear like a suit, and it had like an atom.
That's exactly right, yeah. Because like almost like a public... Yeah.
So he burned it into his third eye.
He said,
burned it into his third eye. That's smart.
Blaine, you sound like you wanted to say something about the pacing.
I saw it last night, and I don't know, it just seemed like it went by like crazy fast.
I honestly agree with you. It really did not feel like it got close to the time limit.
Like it felt like at a point, like, late into the story, like, when they were, you know, investigating at Veet's, you know, corporation,
right.
corporate headquarters, I was like, are they here already, you know?
Right,
was
no, like, yeah.
I was like,
it did seem to move quick, and actually, one thing I noticed as of was it got in, like, halfway through the third act, I was, or, like, I guess right at the beginning of the third act, I was thinking, it really seems like...
I don't think there was never like a point where the tension, like, you know, like
that's because of the stakes thing.
Yeah,
like, there's not, you know, the people who you're following aren't really being threatened by anything. There's kind of the thing about the
mystery of the somebody's killing them. Yeah,
but they're just investigating it. At no point did they ever really seem in danger.
And none of them were threatened except for Rorschach.
And that's why the you know, it in Moore's book, he puts the stakes there for the people to show the normal people, and there's people, these people who chose to do this thing who are, you know, in some way or another, power hungry, or they're adventurers who feel like they, you know, they can do more. They're talented people, they're skillful people who can use this to their basically selfish means. I think one thing that Snyder did, possibly unintentionally, but kind of made it seem a little more sense than Moore's stuff, is that the scenes where Silk Spectre 2 and Night Owl, or whatever the hell his name is, where they're, you know, first they fight those guys in the alleyway.
Yeah, they fight Lopan's gang.
And they brutally, you know,
yeah.
beat them more so than in the comic. And yeah. then the thing in the prison hallway where, you know, somehow they're more respectful of prisoners who've committed murder and rape and stuff. They don't kill them, but they kill a bunch of the gang members who probably just mug people. Anyway, they're smiling and grinning, and they're so excited that they're back in the business of beating ass. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Snyder was correctly stating that, you know, people who would do this thing would have something wrong with them. People who dressed up in a suit would have something wrong with them.
Yeah, that's why they showed, like, you know,
they are somewhere deep inside them, something is broken, and they need to beat people to feel powerful and like they're doing something, like they're accomplishing something.
You mean you're reading that into that, but you get that from the body language? I feel like Moore puts that in there too. I mean, the comedian is the ultimate epitome of that.
But in his, the Night Owl, the what's his name? Dan, whatever.
Dreiberg.
He's a schlubby,
at that point, yeah.
But right. I mean, and actually, I had heard that they had made Patrick Wilson seem way... I thought they did a pretty good job of making him schlubby, because...
Well, first shot, he looked like he had the real double chin, totally, like, bullfrog thing. But
and
then
they put him in puffy clothes and stuff.
But then after that...
When you see his butt, you're like, oh, wow, he's got a nice butt.
But then after that...
I thought that, at least.
He never looked really very schlubby. He wasn't as schlubby. The girl was a girl and not an old, like... hag, who she kind of is in the comics. She's all been smoking a lot, and she's got a lot of, like, lines. They with makeup, kind of try to do it, but, you know, it's movies. You still need to make your people look good.
Oh, yeah. Why didn't, why wasn't Silk Spectre ever smoking those crazy cigarettes?
Studios really, really, really...
they can't do smoking.
They lean on people about smoking.
Like, dude, the Valkyrie had crazy smoking.
And that's why it was rated R, probably.
Yeah.
You're seriously supposed to give movies... They say one of the reasons why they give a lot of things rated R that...
Well, it was
that
rated R,
might possibly be... I know. Is for smoking.
It's not even, like, smoking. That's, like, futuristic, crazy, alternate reality.
Yeah, they didn't get into that too much either, all the inventions... Well,
that's what was weird about it.
You were able to tell, because they try to throw some Blade Runner-ish, there's blimps everywhere.
Yeah, thing, but they look, know, like regular blimps.
Mostly, yeah.
But you know the thing about the recharging cars and stuff and the power? They, like, totally, you know, switched that around. Like, because in the graphic novel, you know, they already had the whole power thing. And
Right.
Like, the novel is showing, much more about the U.S. because, having all this greatness and not sharing it with the world.
But at the end, that's what was weird about it, is, like, they... You know, they
did that because
the
they changed the ending.
Yeah, yeah.
They did it all because they changed the ending.
Yeah.
They had to set up the difference as to why
it solves
that was going
the
on. Because,
you know, power.
More specifically, Moore made a comment on the fact that in his ending, you know, the dumb thing happens, and it's all due to the work of these brilliant, not only scientists,
but our artists,
and like anyone who's of value beyond regular just human going about your business,
a brain trust,
creators
of
things. And he was commenting on their usefulness in this messed up Reaganaut society, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm feeding Ian too much here. This is terrible. He's going to explode into a ball of conservative rage in a moment.
I can feel it.
so I mean, Moore's thing, it all makes more sense. But if you had adapted, if you made a
it still 13, makes sense.
If
though.
You made a 13-hour long movie about every single issue of Watchmen and did it frame for frame and nothing, a single thing changed in it, you would be like, what? You know, it wouldn't make sense. It wouldn't really work as a movie.
Have you heard about the motion comic, the 5-hour long one? It's like an animated comic that they're selling.
Is it literally got like the pages that are like just straight text out of like?
No, some frames are animated and stuff, and it's supposed to be pretty good, I guess. But it's not
that's
like
the thing, though, is that you know
it's 5 hours long.
It's like if they had gave the Watchmen series to Terrence Malick instead of Zack Snyder, he would have made like a 40-hour long thing where there's long drawn out shots of people smoking in the bushes and looking up at the clouds and alligators walking by and weird things like that and.
Terrence Malick doing why that's yeah. pretty funny.
So I think you know Zack Snyder was probably as good a choice as it could make for this. It had been through the hands of so many other people.
I didn't get the impression that he was showing any disrespect for the source material at all. So I don't. It's not like.
But it's not a disrespect. It's the fact that
being smart about it. He's like, I got to make an actual movie.
That's
here.
The thing is that I think he literally made the best possible way you could ever adapt that thing, and it still was flawed. And I think because of the fact that because it's a movie, you got to cut out the depth, and the source material doesn't really translate.
It's like it's not that great, but you can't fault them for trying and doing
not that it's
doing
not that,
well.
That great, it was very visually impressive. It was very very entertaining.
Yeah, there are parts that are really good, but like you said, it's definitely. I don't know. I think it's gonna bomb. I think that people are going to go in and feel ripped off that there's not three straight hours of action like the trailers led them to believe, and that they're just not going to understand A to B to C to D.
How much did it cost to make?
Because you don't get
159.
You don't get that unless you've read the comic. You're not going to know like the little intricacies of the logic that are going on to like connect the plot. You kind of can still follow it, but. You feel like you're
it
missing
just
something.
It loses a lot of impact.
It's got to make $300 million before it makes a profit. It's gonna make at least that much worldwide. I don't think it's gonna be a huge. It's not gonna be like a $600 million smash or something like that. I don't know. I mean,
It'll do.
It's not like there's a sequel they're gonna make. So you know, it's not like it really matters. It's just what it will say
Watchmen
about
babies?
Trying to
Watchmen babies.
Watchmen fetuses.
That'd be great.
Feti.
Watchmen 1.5, where it follows Timon and Pumbaa behind the scenes. Here's the story that we experienced during Watchmen. Have you seen Lion King 1.5?
No,
it's great.
Oh. I'm sure it's good.
Lion King 1.5. Kids are like, what does 1.5 mean?
It's directed DVD.
It was directed DVD.
I mean,
it's basically Lion King, except for it follows Timon and Pumbaa during the whole thing.
So thematically.
Getting a call.
Business.
Getting a call.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, did you see the video I posted on my Facebook?
Mm-hmm.
Because you guys were talking about, you know, how the comic was drawn like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
They have a video on YouTube about like a Saturday morning cartoon Watchmen. It's hilarious.
Did somebody animate it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Sounds great. Did the guy who did the voice of Leonardo from Ninja Turtles, was he part of it?
Which one? The new one? That's Dean Venture.
No, not the new one.
It's like a fan made.
Yeah, the guy who did the voices for every cartoon for
Frank Welker or whatever.
Like
it's
that,
just
yeah.
like the intro of it. You know,
he sounded like this. Totally.
It
awesome.
Actually does kind of sound like
yeah.
that.
That was more Mikey, cool. I think. Yeah, I think that's more.
Yeah,
Mikey
was totally like that. No, his was like he said tubular and stuff.
He did. I think just in wrapping up our sort of general take on it. Problems.
But you know what though, we didn't discuss one thing.
Yeah.
I
want to talk more about it.
Well, but I think the most important thing that Moore was trying to do was it was a dissemination of the superhero
deconstruction
was
of that.
Complete,
yeah.
You know, this was it was meant to be a thing where it's supposed to show why we feel that these people are important when in reality this is what they would be like.
Yeah.
Except for the guy who I personally love the Dr. Manhattan character just because. It's his version of what Superman would be like, you know, and how ridiculous the idea of Superman is, and the fact that Superman in the DC comic universe would have to be the best, most good, most kind, being in the history of the entire universe to not abuse his power in any
way. That's why it was great when she said that he was bullshit, right?
Right.
Yeah. Bullshit.
Well, the thing about Superman, though, is that he was raised in the Heartland.
Who gives a crap?
Because he fights for truth.
It doesn't matter.
Truth, justice, and the American. He can do anything. The American way.
So eventually...
Not what Nixon would have you believe.
Okay, you know what? So anyway... As
get the connection
as,
there?
And the point is this. Okay. As this guy becomes more powerful and becomes, you know, he's more powerful than Superman ever was. He can do things Superman could ever do.
Yeah.
But Superman, generally, despite the fact that he is an absolute god to people in the DC universe, he is basically the god in the DC universe. He's not really. But, like, to Earth, I mean, he's the ultimate protector of Earth, whatever. But why?
Like, why would he do it?
Why?
And yeah.
You know, and so his point was that, like, you know, this is not, that's not his point, but he was commenting on that, you know, and that the Dr. Manhattan character, as he becomes more and more
detached.
Well, he becomes detached because he's learning. The more and more he learns, the more he can do with molecular junk.
The less interested he is.
The less interested he is in humanity.
In the very soap opera of humanity.
And in the comic, he does, you know, he does it well. It's drawn out to the point where, like, narrative-wise, when he's finally convinced of caring about humanity through the flashback thing too, it's not nothing she tells him; it's something he experiences through her eyes.
Yeah,
you know, things felt rushed in the movie just because they had to cut all that stuff out for
time. That's true.
Yeah. It really did.
And
so it felt a little fake that, like, after she and Night Owl rescue Rorschach, which they don't really rescue him, they just pick him up.
Yeah. Which I like.
Yeah, that's cool, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, we got him. He's like, I gotta go kill this midget first.
Who's got, like,
Mickey.
It's like if you took the rat from Total Recall that Richter shoots,
yeah,
and you made it Mickey size.
That's what he's doing.
Then like, I mean, because the blood in that rat...
Oh, totally.
Was insane.
Yeah,
but
was
the
way
blood,
too much
the blood in Mickey? Yeah.
More blood than was in Mickey came out of the door in the split second that they
showed. Because he's a little person. Yeah. He's a little
that's
guy.
A little person. That's what they like to be called.
Do you think he was doing gonorrhea or jaundice?
I don't know. He was doing encephalitis.
You took my gonorrhea!
I know.
He took his jaundice, I think. He came in all yellow.
Mm.
Right. The gonorrhea one was better, though, because he sat back and took a sip from a flask and lit a cigar and started telling a story about a mm-hmm. woman somewhere. What was I talking about?
The rushing, the whole story.
Yeah,
and so I think...
Oh, so they pick up Rorschach, and then they're like, woo, yeah, high five, sweet, we did. And then she steps out of Archie, and she goes, is there any hope for humanity? Like, it's a quick switch, like, suddenly to her being concerned, and then him showing up and being like, hey, I noticed you're concerned, let's talk it out.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
We're going to talk it out.
Now. Yeah, because I, like, read the, you know, I read the graphic novel before.
Okay, good.
Like, a few weeks ago, and it all just, like, they're, you know, like right when they open the door of Archie, he's just, like, standing there.
That's the thing, is, like,
it's just
Zack,
like,
Snyder
crazy.
Is completely, he's like, you know what, let's just, you know, Let's make the comic book into a movie. It's so much simpler than, like, if you think about what they did to the X-Men movies.
Well,
just think about what they did.
Yeah, they I mean, I think
you have
only
to adapt
the,
it because
only
it's
the only the third one. I think what they did in the first one kind of is okay because it kind of gets everything together. And the second one I thought was good. I think the second X-Men movie...
The second one was great.
And I think the second Spider-Man movies were both better than the first.
It's because origin films suck for the most part. The first Spider-Man I thought was great.
I liked it.
Because the Spider-Man origin is really
fun.
Simple.
Yeah,
it's
fun.
It's just this nerdy
it's
kid.
Teenager,
he gets bitten.
Yeah.
He turns into a thing. It's exciting. He beats some guys up. That's the
great
Spider-Man
power
thing.
Comes great responsibility.
You know, the Batman origin is completely, you know, it's ubiquitous. Everyone knows it. It's like perfect. You know, Superman origin, whatever. He's an alien. He crashed some bull crap like that.
But other
origins like that, like, you know, the origins of a team, like the Avengers movie is going to be the origins of the team, and like they're going to try to make some Avengers sequel where they fight lamer guys with like turbans on their heads, whoever the bad guys are in the Marvel universe.
The guy's got like a tuning fork hanging off of his arms or something. No, I mean you're right. That's just part of the problem with why this film is going to have tough times, because the general audience isn't familiar with the origin
of
any
general audience.
And it's a whole team.
The general audience wouldn't read Watchmen.
Superman, everyone can walk in and they're going to get an origin story that they already kind of know, and you can kind of fast track it a little. This, I mean, not only do you have, it's so dense, it's so overwrought that you've got two origin stories of two teams in this story, and he has to get one out. He hammers it out during the credits as best as he can.
That was a good idea, by the way. That was a great idea.
It was. Well, what else are you going
to
do?
I know. Well, that's the thing, is that he presented, I was reading about this, he presented it to whoever the hell the studio was. It wasn't Fox.
Some
was
fat cat, right?
Well, anyway, he presented them. They're like, no, we don't like that. And he's like, well, that's what I'm going to do. And they're like,
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they stuck to the 1980s alternate reality thing. I mean, like I said,
Solid Snake's version was different. Yeah.
It's totally faithful.
The ones before were so terrible, modern, you know, and talking about, like, terrorism and stuff.
Well, this still kind of has that when it talks about energy issues. That's really the big concern there. I don't know. It's still got aspects that are kind of difficult and believable. Some of the performances are a little...
People are squawking all about... One of the biggest problems with this as just a work of story is that they majorly telegraph... I'm trying to be spoiler-free here. I can't really say. But
well,
one character who ends up being quote-unquote bad... They telegraph it from the second. The telegraph was invented when, right? 18 something.
Yeah.
It was invented just for this.
It was invented
for this guy. Uh-huh. You know, he might as well have been made of Morse code.
It was kind of like in Sliver when if you look carefully, you can tell it's Tom Berenger, and you're like, it's Tom Berenger.
Well, not that. It's that the first time you see him, he's like, hello, how's everyone doing today? And in the comic, they make this character is much more human.
Well, he's hardly in it, is the thing. He's so busy with his enterprise.
He's hardly in it. It's that he is. He takes time out of his enterprise, and he's very. He's you can tell he's a very hardworking person. He is, you know, smart or whatever. But he has a little bit of humility. He has a little bit of humor. He's human. You know? And
the actor and that did
what
this.
What
I
they
didn't
do is you kind of deaden the effect because in the comic, this person does what he does. Because he's honestly trying to save everyone from themselves. In this, it just kind of seems like a little bit like it's just
bored.
An ego thing.
Yeah, he was ego. I mean, you get that it's an ego thing in the other one, in the comic.
Totally.
But in this, I agree with you, and I think part of that is another constraint issue. He just has to get it all out
issue.
And make it happen and keep things as clear as possible because it's so intertwined and convoluted.
You have to foreshadow.
I didn't care for that actor. I mean, there was
Matthew Good. I like Matthew Good in other things. So he's fantastic in like Match Point, where he plays foppish rich.
Yeah,
he
I
was,
can see that.
He was there's this movie with Mandy Moore where she plays the president's daughter, and he's the Secret Service agent assigned to her, and they fall in love and stuff.
Oh.
And he chases after her, and he was actually pretty good in that too because he's like. For some reason, she's a British Secret Service. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it could happen. Malin
Ackerman, you were talking about the acting, really is crap. She's gorgeous. She's really hot, but she's just like, she's one of those actresses where, like, you know, there's so many decisions made on casting couches where producers hope, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, look at that. This was Michael Bay casting right here, because Michael Bay, like, there was a press conference early on before Transformers came out. And they're like, who the hell was Megan Fox? And he's like, are you kidding? Look at this. He was like pointing at her body and stuff in the press conference. He's like, would you see this? Would you see this girl and not cast her in your movie? Woo! You know what I mean? Like, he's just going on like a dude in a bar. Like, that's
really?
Why, yeah, oh, totally.
I didn't know.
Megan Fox is just hot as hell, so he decided to put her in the movie, you know? So
doesn't quite do it for me. I think I got an immunity against that. So
against hot chicks.
Against that one.
I think she's crazy hot.
She's crazy hot.
See?
And Malin Ackerman's got, like, you know, she's got nice eyes and junk, whatever.
Yeah, sure.
She's got a cool wig in this movie, right?
Yeah, that is
nice.
I like that.
Wig.
That's
yeah,
cool.
The cool 80s earrings also get all movie long were
what are jackets.
Yeah.
And then, yes, it definitely was very 80s.
So you got those two problems right there. I didn't feel that Matthew Good was as much of a problem as a lot of people did. Malin Ackerman wasn't. It wasn't crippling.
Not really. It's just, I think part of the issue is it's just even with, and I mean I haven't seen this girl do any other films and stuff. I'm not really familiar with their filmography.
She was in like.
But
the goodbye.
It's so rushed. You don't have the time, so she has to turn on a dime emotionally.
It.
I mean, it's like it's kind of a no-win situation. I mean, she might be fantastic.
No, she's not.
In a feature that's like, you know, reasonable.
I think she's been in comedies.
Okay.
There's really no bad. You can't be a bad actor in a comedy for the most part.
Okay.
You know, like, there's just no... There's
you can't
no,
if it's one of those Adam Sandler like, comedies.
Dude, I would have loved... I would have totally loved Wayne's World 2, but the acting was terrible in it, you know? Like, you can't...
Well, it depends. There's no... If it's a comedy, it's about the jokes versus, like, the story.
Comedies are about jokes.
Sometimes there's, like, a story there, too.
That's Shakespearean funny. Comedies?
I don't know. Okay, fine. The Divine Comedy. I don't know. Whatever.
What's that one called? Much Ado About Nothing?
Mm-hmm.
There's a bad actor in that. His name is Keanu Reeves. But
I never saw that.
Shakespeare comedies are like, it's just a story where there's some double crossing. Then at the end, everyone gets married.
Instead of dying, they get married.
They get married.
Which is a kind of death.
So the funniest thing about Much Ado About Nothing is that it's all these British actors, these fantastic British actors for the most part, and all these like Jacobean, you know, trained, whatever. And of course, Branagh directs it, and you know, he acts it in, what's her name, Emma Thompson. And then the king and his princes, or the princes and his two princely brothers come up, and it's Denzel Washington and his white brother, who's the guy from House and Dead Poets Society. And then his other brother is Keanu Reeves, who's sullen and sulking the whole time. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, hello, cheerio, to good fourths of tidings. And Keanu Reeves is like, to what fourth do I owe this dearest affordian scubbahub? And it's like a surfer guy with scruffy beard.
I know. I think lines. I have seen a bit of that. And I was like, really? Are you kidding me? It was
stunningly stupid. Uh-huh. In Hamlet, the 4-hour Hamlet, which is awesome.
With Jack Lemmon?
Jack Lemmon, of all people, is one of the guards.
Yeah.
Tellest my dear friend Horatio that I, you know...
What's going on here?
What's going on here? Coffee's for closers.
Coffee is for closers. Yes. I don't know. I think if we were going to grade it, I'd have to give it...
I'll give it a B-.
A B-? Yeah. That's pretty harsh. I almost feel like giving it a pretty good grade just because of the task of...
I'm going to do it out of 5. I'm going to give it a 4.
I'm going to probably... When I actually give it a grade on the review, it'll probably be a 3.5, I'd say.
3.5 out of 5?
Yeah. 3 or 3.5. I don't want to give it a 3.5, but it feels like you're grading the filmmaker. Mm-hmm. I don't want to grade him... lower.
No, you have. You're just talking about the movie.
I know, but that's the thing. Is that?
I know you've got this whole like you know this bromance thing with Zack Snyder, but you gotta.
I don't like it. You know, his son played the young Rorschach.
Yeah, he did. Just like in 300.
Did they dye his hair red, or does the son just happen to have red hair?
Nah, dude. Who knows? Everything was fake in that.
Jackie Haley was really good. He really was. Every time he barked out a line and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, he was good. I like that. I think I'm gonna give it a 3.
He was really cool in Maniac Cop 3, too.
He was in Maniac Cop 3? Yeah. Oh, awesome.
Or was it 2?
You mean also?
Why are you always talking about Maniac Cop?
Because it's on all the time.
Yeah, I would
He's
give...
He's a bad guy in Maniac Cop 3.
Awesome. I would give...
And the second episode of MacGyver. He's a bad guy in that.
He's been around for a while, huh?
Oh, yeah. He was in the Bad News Bears movies as a kid.
Okay.
He's Kelly Leak. Yep. Kelly Leak?
I know, yeah. With the arm.
Yeah.
With the ringer.
He's the ringer. He's the kid who drives a dirt bike and smokes.
I know. I would give it a 3. You're going to give it a 3.5 or a 3?
Maybe a 3. Well, you said B- was kind of low, but that's exactly a 3.
I guess when you put it into numbers, it doesn't sound so bad.
That's a 3. Yeah, 3 sounds good. 3 out of 5.
Blaine?
I already gave it a 4.
Yeah, Blaine saw it twice in less than 24 hours, so...
Pretty good, Blaine.
I did it.
Pretty heavy.
See you again tonight?
I
wouldn't mind seeing it again at all. I enjoyed the movie.
You get to enjoy it more when you see it again, just because you're not paying attention like so much to, you know...
Yeah. The aesthetics were high. It's, you know, it's what a movie should be. It should be an exciting, action-packed thing, but it comes from such a dense, intertextual... source that's just, I mean, he did it justice, but it just doesn't, it's not meant to translate, I feel.
Yeah, it's
I'm waiting for the new one.
I'm excited to see how much that,
because they add the whole entire, you know, Black Freighter thing,
right? Yeah, they said they add a bunch of the shrink stuff, and they add a lot of the characters back in that had to be cut out.
Well, the shrink stuff is one thing, but I mean, the whole aspect of the artists, that's the only real reason that the Black Freighter thing is relevant, I would say.
Well, that changed a lot too, but it's not just the writer. If you look really closely, the Black Freighter story and this guy who turns out that he killed a bunch of people inadvertently or whatever like that at the end of it, it's supposed to mirror the Ozymandias character.
That's true. That's
and,
true.
And so that's it why it, that's why it's in there. And you don't, you're not really supposed to realize that until the end. You're supposed to question what the hell is
this one. I mean, one last thing that I would say is that he was a little indulgent for 3 hours. There were things that could have been cut from the 3 hours that were not character related. I mean, they could have sharpened it up and still put more good stuff in it. Like, honestly, we didn't need to see like them have sex.
And it was that, and was definitely gratuitous.
It was.
And I don't know if this is a problem or to his credit, but he does, you know, he doesn't let editors chop it into Bruckheimer. It's not Bruckheimerized. He had long, long cuts, and sometimes it was distracting because the scene where they're first playing Casey and the Sunshine Band, he's slowly moving over the people riding in the streets, mm-hmm. and the Archie comes up. It's like a minute and a half long shot, it seemed like, or something like that, before it cuts away.
Well, stuff's happening in it.
Well, I understand that, but it's happening in slow motion.
Mm.
So, you know, all that's doing is dragging out the time.
That's true,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, they could have cut scenes like that in half and shaved probably another 15 minutes off the thing if they wanted to.
Some of that,
There was, before the movie came
they
out,
had
there was
flashbacks
this...
within the movie of what you saw in the movie already.
Mm-hmm.
Which is always kind of a really. I mean, right. The movie's got so many flashbacks of stuff you haven't seen.
What part was that?
At the very end.
In a few places, they did a little bit.
It was like crazy unnecessary in one part. Oh, the part when he was telling the joke about Pagliacci or whatever.
Yeah, right. They couldn't
that,
have
that,
any.
That seemed kind of.
I'm watching that, exactly, and I'm watching that, and I'm like, why couldn't they just come up with actual story-relevant stuff to tell in pictures right here? Well, I mean, it's obviously want to get the joke out, but it's all just talking. So what can you
and put... And showing stuff that already happened.
Yeah, I mean, well, it could have showed stuff, I mean, that we hadn't seen
there, yet. There was, I didn't really have a problem with any of that stuff. The main thing I had a problem with was that the comic book, and this is what mainly didn't translate, and this is also to no fault of Snyder or Moore, really, but... is that flashbacks in comics are totally fine because you just go to it. Flashbacks in movies always seem like a crutch. Always. Yeah. And since so much of this movie has to do with two generations and how they, you know...
I wonder about that. I mean, in terms of the crutch thing, because I think it's a storytelling crutch, basically.
In the beginning of the second act, there's like three flashbacks back-to-back that are only cut apart by cutting to someone else's face at the funeral. And that is totally lame. You should not ever have to do that in a movie.
I didn't mind it because it fast-tracked the flashbacks and got, like, the backstory, you know? Like, right. Rather than drawing it out.
No, I understand that. But it's very, very forced is what it is. And that also has to do with the truncating.
Yeah, a lot of it seems forced. Like, you know, not just that. But just because, I don't know.
Talking about the acting again?
Yeah. Just a lot of the...
Well, they're not a lot of time.
If you try to ignore the acting, then...
And I don't think it's... Like you said, none of it's terribly to a fault. I think if you're a fan of a general comic book, if you like Iron Man and Dark Knight... If you like Dark Knight, you'll probably get a kick out of this movie. Having not read the graphic novel, I also think that it doesn't, in and of itself, spoil the graphic novel. I mean, who gives a crap about the fact that the ending is different? Like you said, it's somewhat superficial. But, I mean, it's the sort of case where people will tell you, and, God, you know, there's going to be people that are fans of this, and there's going to be, like, the Akira syndrome, which is, like, you talk about, like, oh, man, Akira, it's such a great thing. And then there's always, like, the guy that's like, oh, I read the manga, it was much better, you know, right. I had more going on. It's like, oh, I read the graphic novel. Well, you know, it might have explained a little more, but I don't really, you know, in that case, I think it's probably not as big a deal. In this case, obviously, there's a hell of a lot more going on.
Yeah.
And you can say, like you can in so many other cases, oh, the book was better.
I don't think it's a question of whether or not it's better. I just think that it's a question of the fact that there's certain things that can't be translated. The best comic book movies have been ones that are adapted by people who understand what a movie should be. If they had taken that source material of Watchmen and chopped it up into like what a real movie is
like
supposed to be,
like an hour and 27 minutes.
Not just that, but like all the beats and the characters, mm-hmm. you cut out what you don't want to.
It still kind of has that.
But if they had done that, really, like what they would have done, and made it into like a diehard length thing with just the right characters and right beats and right lines and everything like that, then you would have been like, why the hell did they make this? It's not like, what's this about? You know, so it had to be translated from, you know, as close to as possible, and it just I just don't know if it completely works. And
justice spill on.